Hello, and welcome to This Thing Called Life, a podcast dedicated to sharing stories about acts of giving, kindness, compassion, and humanity. Your host, Andy Johnson, will introduce you to powerful stories about organ, eye, and tissue donation from individuals, families, and healthcare teams whose experiences will inspire you and remind you that while life is hard, unpredictable, and imperfect, it's also beautiful. We are so happy you're here. Now, let's join the show.
Welcome to This Thing Called Life. I'm your host, Andy Johnson. We created this podcast to share some of the meaningful conversations and heroic stories we hear daily about organ, eye, and tissue donation. While our goal is to celebrate life and lift up one another, we also want this to be a safe place to talk about the challenges of battling chronic illness, being a caregiver, and walking the path of grief and loss. We will discuss the acts that can save, improve, and change the lives of others, sending ripples of hope everywhere. In today's episode, we are going to talk with Monica Wheatley.
This episode is brought to you by LifeCenter. Are you interested in saving someone's life by becoming a living donor? You have the potential to help save and enhance the lives of others, those who suffer from chronic illness or the effects of traumatic events. Statistics have shown that a new name is added to the national waiting list every 10 minutes. You have the opportunity to help others and save lives. You have the power to donate life. By offering a kidney or a portion of the liver, living donors offer their loved one or friend an alternative to waiting on the national transplant waiting list for an organ from a deceased donor. Today, the number of living donors is more than 7,300 per year, and one in four of these donors is not biologically related to the recipient. Go to Life Pass It On for more information. Thanks to LifeCenter for their continued support.
I'm here today with Monica Wheatley, who is a living kidney donor. Welcome, Monica. Before we get started, can you tell our audience a little bit about you and your donation journey?
Awesome. Thanks, Andy. Thanks for having me. Super happy to be here. Anytime I can talk about this part of my life, I will do it because it has honestly been the best thing that I've ever done with my life, pretty much. So I love talking about it. I come from Cincinnati. Born and raised in Cincinnati, moved away a couple times, but keep coming back to this great area. I live in east side of Cincinnati with my wife, Sharon McCormick. We've been together for about 19 years. My mother lives with us because she's actually in end-stage renal failure, which is a bit of an irony plot twist to this whole thing right now. And we are raising my 13-year-old nephew.
Wow.
I sell real estate. Yeah, I sell real estate. And what else would you like to know? I could go on.
Well, I think the most important question is, what high school did you go to?
That is the most important question in Cincinnati. I went to Marymount High School.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah. That's wonderful. We have quite a few people at LifeCenter who attended Marymount or now live in Terrace Park. So
yeah, Missy Holiday, right?
Yes, who's a few doors down from me.
Awesome. I went to high school with her husband.
With Brian?
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
They're getting ready to move. Actually, they moved.
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So, but yeah, she and I have worked together a long time.
That's great.
So, as you said, donation is kind of intersected into your world a few different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about how you made the decision to be a living donor when you were in college?
Absolutely. Well, the donation actually occurred on September 11th, 2007. Mm-hmm. Prior to that, I received an email from a friend of mine telling us that our friend Katie was in pretty big trouble, that she had contracted a virus when she was pregnant. And the nature of this virus was to lay dormant for 10 years and then it would attack the kidney. And she was literally on her 10th year. Her son was 10 years old. She was almost to the day. This virus began to attack her kidney. She became very, very, very sick. She was getting ready to go on dialysis. She had been through, her entire family had been tested. Aunts, uncles, friends, everybody, they could not find a match. And it was getting pretty serious. So our friend Amy sent an email to this really close-knit group of friends that we had in college and just asking for prayers for Katie and just kind of updating everybody. The email in its nature was not to ask for a donation at all. Mm-hmm. I read that email and it's funny because you say, how did I decide to? And I honestly can tell you that that decision was made for me somewhere inside me. It was not as conscious as I would actually like to say it was. I just read that and something inside of me said, I'm going to help her. And I recognized how kind of crazy that was. And even my wife at the time, Sharon, said, Monica, that's very sweet of you, but the chances of you being able to do that would be, you know, far and away, like not possible. So I said, that's great. Thanks for that. You're probably right. But I actually know I'm going to help her. It was innate. I just knew it. And I've talked to other donors, and you probably know this. That is pretty common, right? Not every time, I think, but I think it is pretty common. There's just a calling. And that was for me for sure. So I reached out to Katie and said, hey, so sorry you're going through this. I want to be tested. And she said, really? Are you sure? And she said, why don't you think about it a minute? I said, I don't need to think about it. And she said, well, let's talk next week. I think she was very hesitant to go that route. So long story short, we proceeded with the testing. I went through all my tests and I remember exactly where I was sitting in my real estate office when I got the call. She was out in Utah. I was in Cincinnati. So I was dealing with the, I think, University of Utah Hospital.
Okay.
And I remember where I got the call and she said, hey, we want to tell you something. You're a match for Katie. You're an actual match. Are you her sister? I was like, no, I'm just a friend from college. And she said, you're such a great match. We thought for sure you were a sister. And I said, no, but I'm thrilled. And from that minute on, we started, you know, I guess additional testing for me just to ensure that I could withstand the surgery and psychologically ready to depart with one of my organs and all of that that goes with it. All relatively easy for me just because I was so certain. I was so sure. Mm-hmm. And then September 9th, I think I flew out to Utah. We spent September 10th in Park City and kind of walked around and enjoyed the day. And September 11th, I was in that hospital with Katie and we started the procedure. And
that was donation day.
That was donation day. It was awesome. It was awesome. Wow. My parents flew out with me. And of course they were extremely nervous. And this was, they would not say they had the same experience that I did. They were obviously very concerned.
Concerned. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that was 13 years ago. So how are you feeling?
I feel amazing. Literally,
have there ever been any complications? And what was your recovery time like?
My recovery time was a little longer than normal, and I think even a little longer than what's going on now, because I had to have the open nephrectomy. They could not take my right kidney laparoscopically. Right. So, you know, there was some cutting involved there with that. Yeah. So in general, fine. It was just a little bit longer than what I understand goes on mostly today, which is the laparoscopic, which is a little less. So I was in the hospital for 4 nights and then I had to stay in Utah for another 2 or 3 nights and then I flew home. So it was a week. Again, even if that's the worst case scenario, I'd do it over again a million times because to see Katie pop out of that hospital bed. And that's the whole thing. You know, me donating makes me sick for a minute and makes her better instantaneous. I'm sure you probably see that, right?
Yes.
And that was everything to me. I mean, she rolled down the hospital hallway and came into my bed. And I, of course, was still kind of groggy from everything. And she looked like a million bucks. I'm like, yeah, you look good.
Yeah.
She felt great. And
what's the first thing she said to you when she came into your room?
Obviously, thank you. And are you okay? Are you okay? I mean, very concerned. Her parents were amazing. And I knew her sisters as well, just because I'd known Katie for a long time and they were all there. And at one point I had to say, let's stop the bleeding because they, not literally, but because it was just constant thank yous and gifts in the mail and flowers and all of that. And I'm like, look, thank you. I get it. Yeah. Like, let's stop the bleeding here. I know that you're forever grateful. And honestly, here's the irony and here's anybody listening. Here's what I want to say that's not said often enough. I'm aware of the level of gift that was to her. Clearly, that's very obvious. What you don't realize is the ultimate gift is what you're doing for your own life there and giving it meaning and really making a difference. When I look at the fact that her kids now are graduated from college and they still have their mom, what else in life is there? And so it is as much of a gift to the donor as it is to the recipient. I really believe that.
And it's funny that you say that because I've worked with a few living donors, and one in particular who stands out to me, and she said the exact same thing. She said she felt like it was more of a gift for her.
It's true, and it sounds so kind of hard to really understand, but and I have a great life. Like, I wasn't waiting to do one thing with my life. Right. I already had a really nice life. This was at a level that I don't even think you can really comprehend until you go through it. And so just when people talk about leaving a legacy or having meaning in their life, if this is on your heart at all, this will not disappoint in that category.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's take a turn and talk about we're here. It's 2020. And so donation has now become another chapter in your life. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So my mom, who is right now 72 years old, began having some challenges about a year ago, but we didn't identify them necessarily as kidney challenges. And I'm just doctors trying to figure out what was going on. And she just kept feeling worse and worse and losing energy, and blood work would come back bad. And we finally identified that she was in the time, I think just stage 3 renal failure. Mm-hmm. And over the last few months has just continued to fail in that way. Her kidneys are failing. Mm-hmm. And so she's an end stage. Her numbers are very low and she needs a kidney. And so she's officially on the list. However, of course, we need to find her a donor. She won't make it to rise up to the top of that list by any means. Right. So that's when it becomes, part of our job is to go out and find that donor. And so I made a plea on Facebook at one point when we were ready to share her story. And I did get a number of hands raised, which was truly amazing. It was disappointing for a 1 minute that I couldn't be the donor because I do have the same blood type, a very rare kind of some rare antigens, and I'm quite sure I would have been a match. And a lot of people say, oh, well, maybe you shouldn't have given and whatever. So here's how I feel about that. I created the karma that I know my mom will get the kidney she needs because I did that for Katie, not because I selfishly held my kidney for a maybe situation down the road, right? I just have to have faith that what I did and what I put out there will come back to one of the most important people in my life, and that's my mom. And so I found that to be true. I mean, people raised their hands, people I don't even know that just sort of follow me on Facebook. It was humbling for sure. So we're in the middle of those guys being tested. And my mom, the recipient has to go through all kinds of tests. Mm-hmm. Everything needs to be in line and on the table to know, that she can withstand the surgery. And
Is she on dialysis currently?
Not yet. And this is the waiting game. We do not want to go there, especially in the midst of COVID-19 and having to be, out. And she, there's some challenge with the home dialysis that she's not actually
the peritoneal dialysis.
So that's not going to work. So it's a big waiting game right now. We have an initial match in my youngest sister. However, the hospital, the doctors want a few more.
Okay.
Because you apparently want to rank, this match. You want to find the best match. Just because she is a match doesn't mean that's going to end up working. So we had a moment of happiness and now we're back to reality for her.
That's tough. That's a lot of ups and downs. And I've got to imagine that with COVID being a part of this, that makes things a little more difficult to navigate.
It did. We were in total shutdown mode for 2 months when we could have been moving forward. And that's because they weren't even doing the surgeries. They weren't doing the testing. They weren't doing anything.
They consider them elective for living donors.
Right.
Yeah.
And isn't that a shame? Because as I look at my mom every day and she gets sick, more sick and more sick, that's not elective. We need it now.
I tell you, when COVID started, and that was from, you know, being a part of the donation community, and that was one of the first things that we learned, is that any transplant that was not considered life-saving was off the table. And so that included kidney and liver. And it just, I never quite understood that. And what we saw across the country is about a 38% decrease in donation during that time. And
during
things
that.
Are, yeah. And so that to me means lives were lost because not everyone was able, you know, to survive during that time frame, you know. And so I think been really tough.
You're right. And my understanding through all of this and what I'm seeing, at least with my mom, I'm guessing it's the same with others, is perhaps a kidney will hang in there, but the other complications that happen as a result of your kidney not functioning are that's what's really scary.
Yeah.
And she could have a heart attack, or, you know, she could throw a blood clot, or all these other things. And that's what she's battling right now, is we're like, it's like whack-a-mole on all this stuff that comes up as a result of the kidney. And so you're right. It just seems a little insensitive, but I have to, I guess, just understand that there's a bigger picture here. So
what is your mom's name?
My mom's name's Nancy.
Nancy. So it sounds like Nancy has you and many others in your family as her champions, her kidney champions, which I think is so important.
Yes.
People need someone they're going to advocate for them, because sometimes it's hard for them to do that for themselves. You know, they need this life-saving gift. And so I think Nancy is going to work out. As you said, I think it's the karma of you selflessly giving that gift to Katie 13 years ago. And that's going to come back, and it's going to help your mom, and she's going to get her gift.
I hope and I trust you are right. Thank you.
But I know this has been tough. So,
well, it's tough to watch. And it's so interesting for me to have seen both sides, you know. Yeah. That person will be a part of our life forever. They'll be a sister or a brother, you know. It'll just be, it'll change the dynamics of the relationship. And it's so important. Everybody around my mom is just hoping and praying that the clock doesn't, you know, tick out on her. And it's the worst feeling in the entire world. So this living donor program and what you guys advocate for is more than just important. I mean, it's everything. It's everything.
Yeah. Right. And there've been so many advancements made in transplantation, even from when you were a living donor. And what comes to mind when we talk about all the advancements that have been made is the paired kidney exchange program. And so you sounds like you're familiar with that. Mm-hmm. I think that has been so helpful in allowing people, you know, to kind of extend that network and connect with other people if people inside of their circle aren't a match, say for your mom.
Yeah.
So I think that be a great possibility in helping to find her kidney.
You're right.
There's been a lot of success with that.
And another friend of ours from college, her dad needed a kidney and she wasn't a match, but she went on this list. The dad received a kidney. And I understand that usually it's done relatively close to the time. This one was a little bit delayed, but she ended up giving her kidney in exchange for, I don't know how many levels it went. And she gave her kidney to a gentleman actually from Ohio. She's down in Tennessee, I think. Mm-hmm. And she still feels like she directly saved her dad's life. It didn't matter that he didn't. Right. Yeah. She still has that sense of connection to the, you know, to his kidney and his process.
So oftentimes in my role here at Life Center, in community relations. I'm a director. And when we were able to be out and about and at different events and talking with people about donation, it baffled me the number of people that would come up and say, well, I have a relative that needs a kidney, but I'm not going to get tested. And I would say, well, why not? And so, and then I'd, you know, walk through, you know, try to dispel the myths that they may be feeling, you know, believing and that sort of thing. But so what would you say to someone who, you know, their loved one is in need of that life-saving gift and they're just, they can't seem to wrap their head around the why?
Mm-hmm. Sure. It's a tricky question because I'm not going to put my feelings on somebody else's programming or fear or whatever is causing that hesitation. The way I look at it is this. There's probably a third, a third, and a third. When you take the third rule, you know, the rule of thirds, every group of people, you can almost divide into thirds as far as what you're talking about. So there are a third of people that, heck yeah, I do it. That's awesome. I would love to do it. No problem. There's a third that are like, I'm never, ever going to part with anything in my body. Forget it. I don't care who needs it. Mm-hmm. I think that in my mind, I'm not going to try to change that person's mind. That's right. Just, that's fine. And honestly, I'm not going to judge it either. It is what it is. It's their business. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to the middle third. The people that have that maybe little inkling of a calling to it, but their fears or their programming, or they've never known anybody to have done it, or I just don't know. What if my kids get sick and I should save my kidneys for the next 18 years in case? Or, you know, I want to talk to that group. So I'm not sure I would try to persuade anybody. I just think presenting the story, my story, I love that you're doing this podcast because stories save lives. Telling your story saves lives. Okay. I don't care what story you're telling, you know, whether you've been depressed or you're anxious, telling your story saves lives. And nothing is more true than in the living donor category. So my story, you know, hopefully will take somebody in that middle third and say, gosh, that makes me feel better, or that is what I'm looking for, or I see now it really matters, or, you know, whatever it is that gets that person from the middle to, you know, the yes, let's go, I'm all in. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's just been I'm not going to push that down anybody's throat. You know, it's too sensitive.
It is sensitive.
And I guess I get it from the standpoint of there is a reason they feel that way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to question that. Mm-hmm. But if you're thinking this could be the right thing for you, or this could bring the meaning you've been looking to in for your life, or you have somebody that you've kind of been thinking about that might need it, then I hope this story lets you know, not only is it okay, but it's going to be great. It's going to be great. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think that's how I'd answer that. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I think you're right in the whole idea of the a third, a third, and a third, because I agree. And again, just in talking with people, I think you do meet people who just, they can't get there for a variety of reasons.
You're right. And even if it's not a third, a third, and a third, maybe it's smaller of the people that say hell yes, and maybe it's bigger of the people that say hell no. I think we still have to honor it the same.
I agree. Yep. I agree. We have to respect people's agency and understand, you know, their decisions. I do think that, I know that, you know, in the 15 years I've been in this field, we have seen an increase in the number of people who will step up and say, yes, I want to get tested to be a donor. And I think that that shows that there's been a lot of progress made and people are taking the time to really educate themselves about the process and what that looks like. So Christ Hospital in particular, they have been highlighted because they've had several employees who have stepped up to just to be tested to be altruistic donors. Meaning they don't know who they're donating to, but they've made the decision that they want to help someone else. And I think that's awesome. That just says a lot about our community and you know, people just saying this is the right thing to do. So, yeah. You know, my hope is that we'll see that trend continue.
And the process seems to be, I'm not saying it's without risk, but it's been so perfected, right? Mm-hmm. This isn't like, ooh, I hope you make it. Like, it's not, right? I mean, it's so much more common than that.
Right.
Yes. And yeah. do you know or have some sense the number of people, let's just say here in the Cincinnati area, that are on the list? Do you think people would actually be amazed at how quickly we could eliminate that entire list?
Right.
It's not a mountain that we can't climb.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, we've got about 600 people here waiting for transplants across the board.
Okay.
But more than half of those 600 people are individuals waiting for kidney transplants. And so, you're right. That is something that if people would make that decision, do their research, become informed, they could absolutely impact someone's life as a living kidney donor.
And it's not, 600 isn't insurmountable.
Like, no, it's
how,
not.
How we can't find 600 people to be tested is, it just does sort of blow my mind.
Mm-hmm. So my hope is that through having this conversation with you, just because I think your story is so powerful in that, you know, you made a decision years ago to help a friend in this way as a living donor, but and then to have it reenter your life, mm-hmm. And the fact that your mom now is in need. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing story. And so my hope is that people will listen and it's going to, you know, touch someone and change some hearts and change some minds about what this means. So
thank you. And I do want to reiterate, I do not live with an ounce of regret. And I think that was something Katie was very worried about when she saw my video and she called immediately. She was like, oh my gosh, Monica. And I think she probably was having these feels. I did say earlier, it was like a flash of a second of, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Like, it was almost more unbelievable. But I live with zero regret with that. I just do.
You know what, the sense I get from you and just talking with you, and we have just literally met for the first time on this podcast, is gratitude. That is the word that keeps coming back to me as we've been talking today. You really seem to have a sense of gratitude and a sense of peace.
And, I do. Now, that doesn't mean I'm not completely stressed out and want my mom to get well. Two different things, but you're right. Yes, you're right. The fact I think that I've been through this, that I know what it feels like from this side, like, is actually helping me be a better a champion for her.
You are a champion.
In that
yes.
way. Yeah. And I'm happy to be that for her. So, yeah.
Nancy has an amazing family. I can already tell.
Thank you. We're going to get her a kidney and she's going to be back to bossing me around. And
that's right.
You know,
that's
being
what
ornery.
Our mothers do.
That's right. We need that. I need that. So if anybody happens to be listening and is being called to this story, I am fully open to them raising their hands for my mom.
So how are people contacting you if they are interested in getting tested?
You can reach out to me through Facebook. I'm on there all the time. And my name, last name is spelled W-E-A-K-L-E-Y, Monica Weekly. And so just private message me or do a post on my page. Or I'm also a real estate agent. So if you just Google me, as all real estate agents, we put our phone number and our entire access to our life anywhere, because of course we want you to call us. So yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. So, is there anything else that you would like to share?
I'd like to ask you, if somebody didn't want to part with their kidney or any other, we're talking about kidneys today, but there are lots of other ways, obviously, I know, to participate in passing life on. Mm-hmm. If somebody didn't want to do that, what ways, I'm curious, how do you accept service and volunteering, and what can people do to help continue your message and passing that message along?
Honestly, it's what you said a few minutes ago, and that stories save lives. And people, if they do have a connection to donation and want to share their story, we absolutely want to hear that. So they can visit our website at lifepassedon.org, our Facebook page. There are volunteer opportunities through Life Center. They will visit our website. And while we're not doing traditional grassroots community outreach and education, we are doing a lot virtually. And so if people really want to learn more about donation, you know, I think that the most important thing is that people need to get informed. I think knowledge is so powerful and so important. And don't be afraid of it. You know, I think one of the things that people that make people tend to shy away from this whole conversation is that they're kind of thinking then about their own mortality, and people don't want to think about that. But then also there's those myths and misconceptions that I think have stayed in families for generations, and they just tend to latch on to that because they don't want to talk about it. And so I would encourage people just to get on our website, a lot of great information there, and get educated. And if you have questions, they can always call us at 513-558-5555. There's some other resources out there. AOPO.org, AOPO, the Association of Organ Procurement Organizations, is a great resource. So yeah, I would just say visit our website, start there, and then sharing your stories is so powerful, because I think there's many of us that there could be a connection that you just aren't aware of. So what is the one myth that you want to dispel?
I think a lot of people, well, the question everybody asks is, you know, so how has it changed your life? What can't you do? What, you know, what, how has it changed your life? And with the exception of one thing, my life has literally not changed when we're talking about physically, medically, anything. That one thing is I can't take Advil. But, you know, if you have two kidneys, you shouldn't be taking Advil. Like, it doesn't, right. It's really just that now I really can't.
Right.
And right. I used to, you know, eat Advil all the time, like candy, right? So,
as a real estate agent, I mean,
that's right. And in my 20s and 30s, too much partying.
It was,
called it the doctor, you know, it was the doctor. So, with that exception, and now I take Tylenol if I need something. So now I'm working on my liver with the Tylenol. That's it. You know, and there are some, if I needed another surgery, there are some medicines I can't take that
right.
are in that family that process through the kidney. That is literally the only thing that changed in my life. And I fear that that's really one of the big reasons people just hold back, is they just don't know if they're going to not be able to do things. Now, my mom says when I got out of surgery and we're flying back, she's like, now, you know, this means no more jumping out of airplanes, no more skydiving.
Jumped out of airplanes?
I do. I love that stuff. Total adrenaline junkie. And she's like, you know, you can't do that. I'm like, what are you saying?
You're like, yes, I can.
I can't. I mean, if you damage that kidney, I'm like, I believe I'll get another one because I just gave one. Like, I have no fear of that. Yes. And so it hasn't stopped me. I haven't. I went hang gliding off the coast of California with some guy I didn't know. You know, like, I'm still living my life in just an elevated fashion because of the purpose I've put behind it, actually.
Oh, wow. Yes, yeah. Purpose. I love that. So skydiving, that's a great transition into some other questions that I'd like to ask you. If
sure.
You're, because I love for our listeners just to learn a little bit more about you, and maybe there's some little nugget here that they can take with them as a result of listening to your answers to these questions.
Perfect.
Sounds like you travel a lot. So what is the one thing you take on every trip?
What do I take on every trip? My Burt's Bees lip balm. Gotta have it. And my toothbrush. Let's go with toothbrush.
So this is mine. It's my cocoa butter lip balm that I
love. Nice. Nice.
I have one everywhere.
Yeah, I love it.
Book, Kindle, or Audible?
Audible. Okay, all the time.
What are you reading right now?
I just finished The Four Agreements this morning. I had read it before, and it popped up in my Audible for some reason. And I was like, okay, there's a reason for that. And rereading it a second time was way better than the first time I read it in my 20s or something and had really no concept of what it was talking about. And
right.
Now it brought a lot more meaning because I read a lot and all self-help nonfiction kind of stuff.
Me too.
That's
a great suggestion. I think I'm going to get back to that one as well.
It was a good revisit. What are you reading right now?
Right now, I am reading The Exodus.
Nice. I've not heard of it.
Yeah. So it's a departure from what I typically read, but a friend recommended it to me.
Nice.
So reading that as well, and I do Audible as well.
Do you?
Also listening to White Fragility, which has been excellent.
Finished it a couple books ago,
Yeah.
Really powerful. I honestly was so dumbfounded at how ignorant I was, even though I thought I was rather developed. I am not. A lot to learn there. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's been it's just been a wonderful book. And actually our leadership here at Life Center, everyone is reading it and
fantastic.
And having a lot of conversation around it. So that has been just really good.
Cool.
Really good.
That's great. That's impressive.
Do you have a nickname that you want to share?
yeah. No. Well, the one that comes to mind was from college. My friends called me Mona. And it was funny because, I mean, it's close to Monica, I guess, but I was walking down the quad and somebody screamed, "Hey, Mona." And I turned around, which I have no idea why I turned around. And they just thought that was ridiculous. So that stuck. But people don't call me that too much unless it's college friends.
So where did you go to college?
I went to Denison University, very small liberal arts school up near Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah, made great friends. It was mostly an East Coast school, so many of my friends are from the East Coast. I just met great people, and in fact, I just got off the phone with one of my best friends from college this morning. She was just checking in, and I keep in touch with a handful of them to this day. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay. What's one goal that you have for this year?
I need to get my mom a kidney. Got nothing else. Well, I have other things. Nothing. They all pale in comparison to the importance of that one. So I'm not going to stop until we get that done, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That one's easy. That's an easy one right now.
What's your favorite band?
Oh my gosh. Well, I like music so much. I love all kinds of music, all kinds. So that's going to be really hard. I'm pretty obsessed with Pink. I'm very obsessed with her. I just like her. I feel like I'd really like to hang out with her. I probably will never get to meet her, but I think we would be fast friends. I just like her kind of.
She seems like she's a badass.
Badass, ballsy attitude. I like everything that she stands for. I like that she's not afraid to just be herself, be authentic. And we just need more of that. So I don't know. I mean, I'm a big Beyonce fan as well. And I'm a top 40 junkie for sure.
Okay.
For sure. Right. Yeah.
Favorite movie?
Wow. I think just because of how hard I will laugh, no matter how many times I've seen it, it's Bridesmaids.
I knew that you were going to say that.
You did? How did you know?
I don't know. When you said I laugh at every time, I was like, I know she's about to say Bridesmaids.
It's so freaking good that I can't.
It really
every
is.
Single time. I mean, that scene in the bathroom, is there anything better than that? Honestly. Honestly. And when she walks across the street in the wedding dress, it's so good. It's so good. But I also, strangely, I love Wizard of Oz. Kind of is an all-time like classic favorite of mine. Anytime that's on, I'm watching it.
It's so funny because that's one of my favorite movies.
Is it?
As well, yeah. And I used to have the snow globes.
Yes.
In Kenwood Mall, there used to be a store that had all snow globes, and they had one that had the ruby red slippers in it. And I don't have any clue where it is. But that was like one of my favorite things. I loved that film. Just
There's
such
no
a great
place
film.
Like home. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good. It's good.
Favorite place to visit?
I've only been there once, but by far it's Africa. Went for 16 days 2 years ago or last year. I can't remember.
Wow.
You know, you hear people say trips are life-changing, and that's sort of very dramatic. And I, you know, I'm also very dramatic, so I tend to exaggerate a lot of things. However, that trip was truly life-altering for me in the perspective that it gives you on life. I mean, growing up in anywhere in America, you have no idea. No concept. And I hadn't traveled a lot to third world countries, at least. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of this place and just the pureness and the animals in their natural habitat and the people there are so joyful and helpful and simple. And it really was, perspective-wise, life-altering.
Wow.
I recommend anybody that's thinking, I mean, it was very expensive. And it was one of those things where you like bit your tongue and gulped really hard to write the check. And I would write it over
it
and over and over again.
So worth it.
For sure. For sure. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. How do you find peace?
You're assuming that I found peace. No, I'm just kidding. How do I find peace? Walk on the beach, ocean. That's a place where I can just immediately kind of feel small and feel okay with things.
I think we're sisters, Monica.
Are we? I love this. Just,
like I'm the same way. Like
I love that.
That's my happy place.
We need to hang out on a
okay,
beach, perhaps.
Definitely. Yes.
I took a hike in the woods this morning with my mom's dog, because and that's really peaceful for me. Anywhere in nature, I think for me. You're the same?
Yep, I'm the same.
Cool.
I go to Sharon Woods quite a bit, and we'll go into the trails and with my dog, and I love it. What's your favorite restaurant and what are you ordering?
I'm a Boca girl. Fancy Cincinnati Boca. I love it so much. Love the people, love the food. I know it's expensive, but I would rather pay for something I know gives me great joy and lots of value versus some half-ass $30 dinner that I didn't really, really enjoy. Like, I want to enjoy every bite. And at Boca, honestly, I can't wait for them to reopen. And the people there are so great. The staff is, they're just friends. And that's our go-to treat place for sure.
Have they shut down completely or are they doing takeout or anything?
No, but Nada, their sister restaurant, Soto, is fully open. And then Nada is carry out, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you think the world needs more of right now?
I think the world needs more. Gosh, there's about 100 ways to say this. I'm trying to think. The word authenticity is coming to my mind. And what I mean by that is we are in the business of comparing our insides to other people's outsides constantly. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, we program our brain in a very false, fake surface way. And we're constantly then in that mode of comparison and we don't even know who we freaking are anymore. Like I do in my business, I talk to people, of course, all the time. I also coach and train agents to have a business that they want. And agents are a great kind of cross-section of humanity in that they are just constantly trying to chase something that's not even real. And it's because we're looking outside. Looking outside. So I think being quiet, getting quiet, the world is so freaking loud right now. And just stillness and looking inward and realizing, what is it that I really want? This whole idea of chasing something that we're told to chase kind of goes along with that. And we're chasing wealth and material. And look, I can fall into that. I'm not by any means preaching at any level. I can fall into that very, very quickly. We all can.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I'm working on. Am I chasing a goal that I really want? Or is this something I think I should do or society tells me should do. So if everybody just turned inward every single day and asked the question, you know, what is most important to me today? And if I wasn't being watched, what would I do today? I think it would change. I mean, from everything from just how we dress to how we show up to, you know, our careers and just.
So say that again. If I wasn't being watched,
how would I show up today?
How would I? I love that. So what has this being in this state of COVID and just really kind of changing how we do things, what has that meant for you? Have you had any aha moments since all of this started?
Mm-hmm. I'm not in control of anything. Mm-hmm. And that's a big problem for me. Is that a problem for you? Are you a controller?
I don't think I am, but mm-hmm. others might disagree.
Yeah. And it's not always a bad thing. I'm sort of throwing myself under the bus in a way. I'm a controller in that I want to fix everything. You know, it's not mm-hmm. just that I want to cause things to happen. It's that I think I can take on all of it. COVID is forced sort of the shutdown and forced me to realize I'm not in control. Right. My mom moved in 1 week before the shutdown occurred, before the quarantine initially happened. And that caused us to slow it down, be together. We sat around our dining room table for dinner as a family with my mom and my nephew and Sharon and I, more than Sharon and I have ever sat at the dinner table in our entire lives put together over the quarantine. So it's been really good in a lot of ways. Now, I get it that people are struggling and that it's a real life-altering issue. I'm not saying that it's pleasant for all by any means, but if I'm just looking at the silver linings, I think there are some. I do understand that it's causing people to exist in fear.
Right.
And I get that.
That's hard.
Yeah, of course.
Well, Monica, this has been lovely.
Like thank you.
I've really enjoyed our time together today, and I think this was a great show. And I just appreciate you sharing your journey with us. And so I think that again, this is going to speak to a lot of people who have questions or don't quite understand, you know, what donation and transplantation is all about. So I really do appreciate you just being honest and talking about your experience.
My pleasure. I will talk about it anytime. And if anybody wants a one-on-one conversation and is thinking about this, but has some fear or some questions, of course I will answer them. I also have a lot of people I know that have given kidneys. So if I haven't had that exact experience, I sure can, you know, connect people. And anybody I know that's ever given a kidney is more than happy to talk about it and to share their experience. So I really do mean it. If anybody wants to reach out, I'm completely open to that.
I think that's great. And I appreciate you being willing to do that. Because I think when people are able to connect with others who've actually walked it, that mm-hmm. that is, that's just a huge help. So thank you.
Of course. Well, thank you for what you're doing. And well, your job has real meaning and purpose too. So I'm sure you feel that every day.
Thank you. And I feel blessed to be here. I've been here almost 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool. And, you know, prior to that, I was never anywhere for more than 2 years. So I feel like I found the place where I'm supposed to be.
And keep doing the work. That's awesome.
Yeah. And,
really cool.
And that's what wakes me up every day and gets me excited. So I'm grateful to have this place and work with such an amazing staff. So
yeah, that's awesome.
So this has been such a great conversation today with Monica Weekly. So I'm just so thankful that she was able to join us. I just want to emphasize why we're here. And that really is to talk about how do we work to eliminate that list of people waiting. You know, currently we have about 113,000 people waiting every day for a life-saving transplant. Living donation is an absolute option to help bring people off of that list. And so I encourage people to explore that, visit our website at lifepassiton.org to get more information. Because the reality is that today, 22 people are going to die waiting for a transplant, and every day after, 22 people will die. So we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of education to do, and we have a lot of stories to tell to help people connect with why this is so important. So I appreciate everyone taking the time to listen today. We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Thing Called Life. And make sure you subscribe so you get instant notification of all the new episodes. We truly appreciate receiving feedback, ratings, and reviews. And if you have questions about organ donation or suggestions for future episodes, please visit lifepassiton.org or connect with us on our social channels. Thank you for listening. Remember, joy is an inside job. Every day is a fresh start. Be thankful, be kind, and look for the good in others. You're beautiful, capable, and worthy. The world needs you to be who you were made to be. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to This Thing Called Life. Subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your favorite podcast to make sure you get updates on all new episodes. And we would truly appreciate it if you would share, like, or give us a review to help us grow.